If you enjoy podcasts like this, you should check out our other shows on Health Podcast Network. For example, Nurse Wellness Podcast, hosted by Wendy Garvin Mayo, focuses on the power of stress management and how it's foundational to being your best, doing your best, and giving your best. There's a wonderful episode that you should check out called Letting Go, where Wendy Garvin Mayo shares 6 strategies to release control and manage stress effectively. Check out Nurse Wellness Podcast on your favorite podcast platform or visit healthpodcastnetwork.com.
Imagine if every time you had your period, you had to hide it so that you wouldn't be assaulted or ridiculed. Or you had to stay at home because you didn't have menstrual products, missing school and falling behind. Or that you had to use unsanitary options that could lead to infection. And that's on top of all the other things that go along with periods for many women, like cramps, moodiness, and lack of energy. I'm speaking of something called period poverty, which affects millions of people around the world, including some in the United States. Yet it is often a topic that is shrouded in secrecy and shame. Well, today you're going to hear from a social entrepreneur who's changing the situation for women in India and Africa. She's even coming up with new sustainable products that anyone who has a period may benefit from. This is a very special episode that you won't want to miss. I'm Dr. Mitzi Crockover, and welcome to Beyond the Paper Gown. And before we get started, I invite you to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform so you don't miss any episodes. And please leave us a rating. It helps us get noticed. And one final note, my guest was located in Mumbai when we spoke, so you'll hear some of the sounds of the city during the interview. For me, it's a great reminder of the amazing opportunities we have to connect around the world, to learn about one another, and to solve problems together. I hope you'll agree. I couldn't be more delighted today than to welcome and be able to talk to our guest who is doing some very important work and I think will also open your eyes to some things that I know I wasn't aware of that is so impactful. So without further ado, let me introduce you to Soumya Dabriwal. Did I pronounce that right, Soumya?
Yes, that's
okay,
good.
Perfect. She is CEO and founder of Project Bala, which we're going to talk about. But again, it's an impactful organization that focuses on menstruation in specifically for women in India and is doing incredible work. I met her, I met in quotes because we didn't get a chance to talk then, but I was introduced to her work through a competition called HitLab Women's Health Tech Competition. And she and her team and organization won the People's Choice Award, which is certainly well-deserved. Soumya, welcome, and I'm just so delighted to be able to speak with you. You're coming from India this morning, and I'm here in California, so through the beauty of technology.
Thank you very much, Mitzi, for having me. And it's so incredible to be having this conversation, especially with the immense experience that you have in women's health. So hopefully I can share a little bit more about what's happening in India.
Oh, thank you so much. Absolutely. So let's just start a little bit to talk a little bit about what is Project Bala and what inspired you to create this organization.
Wonderful. So I'll start with why actually did I start the organization and then tell you a little bit more about what we do. So as a college student, I was studying development economics. So I took a keen interest in volunteering. So I was volunteering across African countries and a lot of different parts of India. So I did a couple of volunteering projects in Ghana and South Africa, and then in some villages of India. And these were across 3 different months in 2 different years. And I was working with younger girls and older women where I was teaching them math and English. And across all these 3 different countries, I found out that my girl students and women were skipping 2 to 3 days of class every single month. And when I probed, spoke to them and started asking questions, I realized that it was because of the lack of menstrual hygiene facilities. So it came as a big shock to me that across three different countries, two continents, and two different generations, the same problem could exist. So clearly there wasn't an efficient solution that was seeping into the grassroots communities, and hence something needed to be done. And that's when I started Project Bala. So Bala means a young girl in Hindi. And what we're trying to do as an organization is provide holistic solutions for menstrual hygiene problems across developing and underdeveloped communities in India, Africa, and Nepal. So we're based out of India, and we provide menstrual hygiene solutions for menstruating girls as well as women who are older.
You know, you talked about that they were missing school. This may sound obvious, but tell us a little bit, why were they missing school?
Right. So there are three big reasons for why they were missing school. So the first one is accessibility. So the access to menstrual hygiene products is broken in the system. To access any form of menstrual protection is broken at the grassroots level. So here, if we talk about the village that I was in India, the closest shop that they could go to was a 2.5 kilometer walk away. And when the communities that I'm talking about here, mobility issues, financial issues are so big that these women are actually not allowed to leave their homes, to travel so far and walk and buy these period products if they could afford to buy these period products. And the men in the house were, there was so much shame and stigma associated that the men who actually go to these stores do not have a conversation with women about their healthcare needs or their needs to purchase these pads. So accessibility was a big, big problem. The second thing was affordability. So menstrual hygiene products are expensive. So even if you belong to a household where you can access these stores or you can have these conversations with members of your family who can access these stores, you're unable to buy them or create a budget for menstrual hygiene products. So that was a big problem, that the products available in the market were actually unaffordable. And the third thing was actually awareness. So to give you some statistics, in India today, almost 68% of women and girls are still not using hygienic forms of menstrual protection. They're still using things like old rags, leaves, sand as forms of period absorbance. And of course, the repercussions of these are mammoth. There's 40,000 women who are losing their lives because of poor menstrual health and hygiene. 25% of girls are skipping school. So there are these massive implications, and awareness plays a key role because girls and women don't actually understand their needs. So accessibility, affordability, and awareness were the three key reasons where girls couldn't actually buy, afford, or even understand what they needed as menstrual products. And hence, they had to miss school, had to miss classes, and weren't around for 2 to 3 days every single month.
And I just want to underline, you said that a certain amount or a certain percentage of these girls lose their lives because of lack of hygiene and lack of hygienic period products.
Yes, wow. Because of poor menstrual hygiene practices across the country, Mitzi. So there's examples where we've seen in a village, this was many years ago, and this wasn't us directly, but through research that we've seen where, you know, they're using old rags, and there's a metal button on one of the cloth which they're using as a menstrual absorbent, which had rusted over time. And when they used that as a menstrual absorbent, that led to many infections and eventually led to the death of the person using those rags. So such incidents also, of course, you know, poor practices, taking the wrong types of medication, not being able to get the right type of treatment or access to information at the right time when they're facing different types of problems. You know, all of those things combined, the statistics are 40,000 lives every single year in India.
That is a stunning story and numbers. So enter Project Bala. You pitched such as an entrepreneur, really, at the Hit Lab challenge, because like any entrepreneur, you saw a pain point and you developed a solution. You've now described this pain point, which is so significant. What is your specific solution?
So what we designed or developed as a solution for Project Bala was a 360-degree approach to the problem. So while spending so much time in the communities that we wanted to bring change into, or, you know, that we wanted to impact, what I realized was just providing a product will not be the solution. Just providing information will not be the solution. And just a one-time intervention will not be a solution. We need to build something which encompasses all of these things and is long-term and sustainable. So that gave us the three arms of what we do today. So the first thing that we do is bring awareness and education into communities. So there's this whole layer of myths and taboos and stigma that is associated with period and menstruation in the country. So the first goal is to debunk all of those myths and taboos. The second thing that we're doing is, of course, bring in awareness and information around understanding menstruation, understanding menstrual hygiene, and understanding menstrual health. And the third thing that we're trying to do is bridge the gaps between treatment, understanding when you need treatment, and understanding what is going wrong with your body. So we've got seven different topics in our curriculum, in our education curriculum, which we deliver to different communities across India. Only last week, we reached our 500,000 impact number. So we're very excited to say that we've reached, out of 500,000 women and girls across India and Nepal and a few pockets of Africa. And this awareness curriculum actually then generates a lot of interest for menstrual hygiene products, which we cater to through our second arm, which is the sustainable reusable sanitary napkin, which we've developed and we provide to the communities. So these are technically designed reusable sanitary napkins and can be used for 2 years. So they mitigate all of those challenges that I mentioned before of affordability, accessibility, and of course, awareness we're taking care of through the first part of our solution. And now that we went into the communities and we created the awareness and we had a lot of people talking about their problems, voicing the kind of restrictions that have been imposed on them by virtue of the myths and taboos that existed and how slowly they're getting out of those cycles of misinformation and using the reusable pad and actually, you know, becoming first generation users of menstrual hygiene products. So we realized there's a huge demand that is being generated, and also that gave us an opportunity to create a sustainable model. The third thing we do is we train and employ village-level women entrepreneurs who basically become a spokesperson as well as salesperson at the grassroots level. So these women sell the Bala pads in the communities, earn a commission on that, and also become the consulting points for the women in the village. So if they have any issues that they need, you know, or help with regarding their menstrual health or hygiene or reproductive health, they can come to this person. And they connect it to us, and we then connect them to any resources that they may require. So these are the three main things that we do as an organization.
Wow. You know, that it seems so powerful, the way that you have developed this real network and ecosystem, if you will. I have a couple of questions that I want to go back to regarding that. First of all, let's just talk about the pads. How are they reusable, and what's the technology behind them?
So, you know, reusable pads have always existed. What we tried to do was make them more technical, so that we basically make it safer and more hygienic to use. So the current reusable pads that we provide across the country is they comprise of 4 different layers of textile, and each layer performs a different function. So the topmost layer is a semi-porous layer which allows fluids to flow through. It absorbs nicely, and then the fluid passes through that layer and goes to the middle 2 layers, which are an absorbent core. This is where the fluid gets held, and this is the region which contains the menstrual fluid. And then the bottommost layer is a leak-proof layer that prevents any form of staining, leakage, etc. So the utility is exactly that of a disposable sanitary napkin, but this is reusable, which means that you can use it for 8 to 10 hours. You can take it off, and you can actually wash, rinse, and reuse it after you've dried it out in the sunlight. We've also created an antibacterial treatment on top of these sanitary napkins to ensure that if there is no sunlight exposure, it is still safe and hygienic to use. So that's how the reusable pad works.
And where do you manufacture them?
So they're manufactured in India, in Delhi NCR.
Okay, so you're keeping that also within the economy and the country. You know, I was thinking that in the last few years, because of other organizations, there's been an increased awareness, even in America, about period poverty and the gap. And you talk about girls missing school. There are girls in America who do not graduate high school because they can't afford period products and therefore really truly drop out. And so, you know, it's I think people will be amazed to hear that that's happening in the United States, certainly not to the scale that you're talking about, but it does happen. And, you know, there's even legislation and municipalities starting to wake up to the fact that they need to reduce we have a luxury tax on period products. And we also have, you go into a bathroom and you can't get those products. Or you need a quarter. Who has a quarter these days, right? So in any case, but, you know, going back to the issues, when you were talking about, again, I have this vision of these girls not being able to, you know, go to school because of the relative inconvenience and difficulty with period products. But I also understand that there's also danger, if you will, that women and girls can get assaulted, you know, or they're afraid to go to the bathroom because they might get assaulted. Is that in your experience as well?
So that's a very interesting question, and also not asked very frequently or addressed very frequently, Mitzi. So I'm glad you've actually thought about this. Where what we witnessed was that a lot of girls in the communities that we were working with who'd started using disposable pads or had access to them through government schemes or other donation drives that were conducted were very ashamed to throw these pads or dispose them off in the garbage bins near their homes or around their homes. So they were not happy or willing to or do not actually throw these pads in their home dustbins or their community dustbins. What they do is, after sunset or when it's getting dark, they try and walk in groups of 2 to 3 to an isolated area or an open field where they can either bury or burn these sanitary napkins. And here we witnessed and heard of a lot of assault cases, of bullying, of harassment and assault. And that was also very shocking for us. Again, having a reusable product really helps us mitigate this as well, where we've completely eliminated the disposal part. So, I mean, we try to convert this into an understandable measure, but every single person who menstruates generates 2 trucks of non-biodegradable menstrual waste in their lifetime. So in addition to, of course, the assault and the entire trauma of disposing of pads, the waste that we generate is also something that we need to be very conscious about and need to start thinking and addressing that, which we've not done as a country and as a community. So,
or as a globe, let's just put it there. And then going back to your description of having these kind of female elders, if you will, that are also entrepreneurs and also really connecting. Have you had any challenges or pushback from communities at all with anything that you've done?
Yes. So these village-level women entrepreneurs, we call them Bala Associates. This has been the hardest thing that we've tried to do as an organization, because we're trying to get women to sell menstrual hygiene products. So the first step is, it's such a tabooed topic. So convincing the women to become sellers is the first big challenge, where we have to inject that confidence and training in them to go and talk to the public and talk to people that they don't know about a topic such as periods, because culturally there's a lot of stigma and a lot of taboos associated with periods and the conversation around periods. So that's challenge number one. Challenge number two is when these women actually do become associates and do go door to door, they are not met with any response from the women that they speak with. So they're so shy and there's so much silence around the topic that women just do not want to speak up. So then they have to actually put together groups and workshops where they spend the first 20 minutes talking about other things and, you know, addressing community problems and then addressing the entire women's gathering and talking to them about periods. So this is how we've gradually trained and learned and trained and learned these women. The other big challenge is that the government yet does not recognize reusable menstrual hygiene products as a solution. We've only been thinking about disposable products. So, you know, randomly there are donation drives or there's charity being done where lots of disposable pads are just provided for a month or 2 months. So suddenly a lot of months of hard work, completely, you know, we take like 50 steps back because suddenly there are these free pads that come into the villages because 1 week or 1 month, a politician or a government scheme decided that they wanted to give free pads for a few months. So, you know, of course, that's not sustainable because that's a one-time use solution. So that's another challenge which we're trying to fight with and mitigate with these women entrepreneurs.
You talked about that you've reached 500,000 girls and women. Can you give us a hint about what have been your general successes? And I'd love to hear any specific anecdotes that you might want to share with us about what you've been able to do.
So when I was mentioning that when we're making the Bala Associates or these village level women entrepreneurs and training them to become sellers, it's a very challenging, you know, first month of training, convincing, trying to break the stigma around the conversation and actually handholding these women to go and talk to others. So we had this one lady in Rajasthan, which is the desert state of India. And we'd seen a lot of positive response on the uptake and use of the pad in her community. And we thought that she can be a great community leader because of her communication skills. And we trained her. There was a lot of hesitation and her family wasn't very supportive in the beginning. But if you skip to 12 months later, she, through the sales of pads and through the advocacy that she's done in the community, has bought her first vehicle ever. So she's bought a scooty that now she roams around in with a helmet on and her bala pads in her backpack and is just going village to village, talking to hundreds and thousands of women and just completely breaking the glass ceiling and completely breaking the kind of stigma that was associated with the conversation. And she's inspired so many younger girls to actually come to her and, you know, talk to her about becoming entrepreneurs and becoming, you know, advocates for important community level topics and conversations. So I think that's one of my favorite things that we've been able to achieve through our project.
That is a wonderful story. Thank you for sharing that with us. Do you feel like you're impactful because you tailor your message and because you know the culture? And what, if any, is translatable to other cultures?
That's a very interesting question. So I think culture plays a huge role where I think the reason why our curriculums or our education modules have been so successful in the communities is because they were tailor-made with popular cultural references, with news which is applicable to the community, with examples which came from around them. So the core part of the content can actually just be used in any other culture with references from that culture. And to articulate it better, and through an example, I mean, we've done these curriculums in Nepal as well as Africa. So the content remains the same, but the tools that we use to deliver that content or the examples that we use to explain that then is based on those cultures, on those countries, on the beliefs that are prevalent in those areas.
Can you give me a specific example?
Yes. So in India, the way we start our workshops for young girls is by citing the example of one of our favorite sportswomen in India, and we talk about her for 10-15 minutes, and we talk about, do you think she misses any of her practices when she's on her period, etc. And that's how we warm up the girls through the conversation of talking about periods, etc. And it's a very fun conversation where in the beginning we'd ask everyone to stand up, raise their hands, talk to us about what they think the sports person would do and how they think it would be useful for us to, you know, just break the ice with these girls. So it's a lot of fun, the first 20 minutes, the first 15, 20 minutes of the conversation. In Africa, of course, what we try to do is there's a lot of dancing in the communities that we're working with. So we gave that example. We would use those examples of girls who were dancing in the community for some of the festivals and how they do it. And do they wish that they could dance even when they were on their period versus, you know, things like that. So we would try to use what they were doing in the community, what they were fond of, and then contextualizing the conversation accordingly. Even in terms of use of products, when we saw entering some villages in India that a lot of women are also throwing their loose sanitary napkins in any water bodies, which were, you know, accessible to them, not too far away from their homes, but far enough so that no one sees them or like associates their pads with them. They were throwing their pads in those water bodies. So we would use that as an example that, do you think that is like, does anyone like crossing that water body or what do you think about those things? So just using these examples according to what we saw in those villages, what we see in their areas and trying to bring those nudges in the conversation that we have with them through the workshops and the curriculum.
Thank you. And you are selling these pads, but I assume that that's not your only source of funding.
So we've got two funding sources, essentially. So 90% of our work that we do right now is B2B, where we'll pitch a particular project to a government, a corporate, or an institution where we think that our intervention can really bring this like a positive impact and the community really needs it. So then those corporates, governments, or institutions have a service agreement with us where we decide, okay, we're going to reach out to 30,000 women and girls, we're going to do the awareness curriculum, we're going to provide reusable pads to all of them, and we're going to set up X number of women entrepreneurs for this entire community. So that becomes one type of funding partnership that we look at, and that organization then supports the entire project financially. So they pay for all of these three things. The second thing that we do as funding is the entrepreneurs. So they sell, earn an income, keep 20% of that, and bring the rest back to the organization. So these are the two mediums of funding that we have as a company.
And if someone wanted to become involved with the organization, how might they be able to do that?
So there's multiple ways. We're constantly looking for knowledge partnerships, and especially in such a platform, it's where, you know, there's individuals who listen in who've got interest in women's health space. We're very keen to innovate, think on any sort of knowledge partnerships that we can build, because we have access to so many communities and hundreds of thousands of women. So any sort of information curriculums that we can build, any sort of innovative ideas. For say, the second thing is if anyone wants to volunteer with us, you know, in terms of being on the field with us, that's very possible. We've got multiple projects running across India, and we're very happy to take as many volunteers as we can to these project locations. We've also got office support that we require in terms of marketing materials. We don't spend enough time on social media presence building as we do on ground presence building. And I think social media will help us bring more partnerships in. So someone who has an expertise there, we're happy to partner with them as well. And any other women's innovation that you want to try out a pilot with, we can also do that.
And it sounds like you have some line of sight to some long-term plans. Can you share those with us?
Yes. So what we realized was that the reusable sanitary napkins that we provide right now, we collect data, as I've mentioned, and we saw great uptake. But in a lot of areas, we were averaging 93%. And then over time, we saw that there were many areas where it was much lower. So roughly between 75 to 77%. And we were very curious as to why the average is suddenly dropping and what's different in these areas. And what we realized was that these were areas of high rainfall or drought prone areas, or areas where the houses that women and girls live in, and these can also be slums, there's not enough place to dry reusable sanitary napkins out at. So here the usage and the uptake of the pads was much lower because there was drying, washing, and just the space problems that they were facing. So we started thinking of solutions for these, and we've come up with these very interesting hydrophobic pads which can actually be used for 5 years. We're partnering with these incredible scientists based out of Sweden who come up with the technology, and we're helping them actually contextualize that to the communities that we work in. We're running a lot of tests right now to see where these pads actually only require 50 ml of water to be washed and reused, and they actually don't require any form of sun drying. You can just wipe these pads with a piece of cloth and they'll be good to be reused within actually 2 to 3 minutes. Again, instead of that 4 to 5 hour cycle which we require to dry pads out in. And we do think this can be a complete game changer, not just for rural India, but globally as a menstrual hygiene product offering, because it's an eco-friendly, sustainable, very easy to use, and a completely never heard of solution that we're building and hoping to bring in the next 9 months.
Wow, that is powerful. Well, we'll have to check in with you and to see how you're doing with that. So that's terrific. Well, before I let you go, I want to make sure that we covered the topics that you felt were important. So anything I didn't ask you that you'd like to share with our audience?
I think just a little bit about our team. I'd love to tell you a little bit more about.
Please, yes, absolutely.
Cool. Awesome. So I think that's very important for me because these are young people. So our team, everybody is under the age of 27 currently. And these are young people who've gotten their MBAs from Ivy League universities such as Cornell and very prestigious universities of India. And they could have chosen any other career path as well. And they had many options available. But all of us have decided to really dedicate our time, work, and all of our energy into building these solutions. So I feel extremely happy and proud that I've got a co-founder like Aradhana and incredible core team members who are consistently thinking of new ways, ideas, and models of scaling impact in rural parts of India, which is actually not the easiest thing to do many times, where we've had to cross villages on buffaloes because there were no roads. Cross water bodies on buffaloes because there's no roads, there can be no vehicular access. We've had like places where we've been chased by men in the villages with sticks in their hands saying, we don't want you to westernize our women. You've come with these city concepts of, you know, menstrual hygiene or city concept of women's health. We don't want you to be polluting our cultural beliefs, and we don't want you to be polluting our girls and women. You know, it's not easy. So I'm very happy and excited that we've got such a nice young team who's so motivated to do this. So that's the last thing I wanted to share with you.
Wow. Those visuals are impactful. And if there are any folks thinking about how bad their commute is in the morning to go to work, I'm going to refer them to this episode because that is incredible dedication, and you're doing such impactful work. Thank you so much for sharing your time and your story with us. Really appreciate it. Soumya Dabrawal, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks a lot, Mitzi. Thank you for having me. It was so wonderful talking to you and sharing more with you.
Thank you.
Can you imagine crossing a river on a buffalo to get to your clients? Now that's real dedication and such a great example of an innovator and passionate advocate. You know, I have the honor of speaking with so many leaders in the area of women's health, and I want to invite you to subscribe to our newsletter at beyondthepapergown.com so you can be sure to hear about our latest episodes with these entrepreneurs, policymakers, clinicians, and scientists that are all working to make women healthier and empowered to live their best lives. Our hope is that you'll learn something that can make your life healthier or be inspired to take action to help others do the same. Thanks as always for listening. We'd love to hear from you, so follow us on Instagram and Facebook and leave us a comment there or on our website. Until next time, Take good care. Our podcast is produced by Patrick Shambayati and me, and our associate producer is Kyla McMillian.
If you enjoyed podcasts like this, you should check out our other shows on Health Podcast Network. For example, Nurse Wellness Podcast, hosted by Wendy Garvin Mayo, focuses on the power of stress management and how it's foundational to being your best, doing your best, and giving your best. There's a wonderful episode that you should check out called Letting Go, where Wendy Garvin Mayo shares 6 strategies to release control and manage stress effectively. Check out Nurse Wellness Podcast on your favorite podcast platform or visit healthpodcastnetwork.com.